This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Hing.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to Transformation with Tara Sutphin. Tara Sutphin is the author of Blame It on Your Past Lives and Soul Agreements, three audio CD series, Metaphysical Meditations, Sourcing Series, and Sleep Programming. Tara has also collaborated with Emmy Award-winning Shane Stanley and Marla Maples on numerous DVDs. Tara Sutphin is a master in the psychic sciences. If you'd like to find out more about Tara's work, upcoming seminars, and meditations to help you fulfill your dreams, visit her website at TaraSutphin.com.
Welcome to Transformations with Tara. This is Tara Sutphin. And today my guest is Bruce F. Rosen. And he has written a book, If You Ever Need Me, I Won't Be Far Away. And it's his personal memoir. And he's blended Eastern and Western philosophy and spirituality with love and loyalty for his friends and family. And he just strives to understand the responsibility and personal boundaries, whether it's necessary to regret any part of our lives and to create enormous joy. So welcome, Bruce.
Good to be here, Tara.
Yeah, thank you for coming on the show. We've been having so much fun talking the pre-show here, catching up. But
Definitely.
Because we've like switched around a little, you know, through our lives. You live somewhere cold, and were you raised in Canada?
I was born in Canada, but my family brought us, you know, myself and my brother at that. There were two of us, the two siblings at the time, just myself and my brother. Later on in California, my mom had a couple more. But I was born in Toronto, Canada, and we moved to California when I was about 4 years old. So went back to Canada for a few years, around 1966, 67, 68, and then moved back to California again. So born in Canada, started ice skating around the same time I learned to walk. And then went back for a few years and then came back.
Right. And you were telling me you used to surf all the points in Malibu, you know, which is just so huge still. You know,
yeah.
The it's really fun to watch all the surfers all the time.
It was an interesting life.
Yeah.
I grew up playing, you know, I grew up a competitive hockey player, and it became very intense. And my mom, who was you know, and you'll learn about her in the book, an incredibly healing, incredibly psychic person. People, you know, came from all over the world to see her. She only attended one of my hockey games, and it's when the games became went to a very competitive level. I was, about in my mid-teens, and she said, "Bruce, the time has come for you to stop playing hockey, because either you're going to get hurt, or you're going to hurt somebody, you know, and I can see it happening. I can see it unfolding, and you're a very good hockey player, but the time has come for you to do something else." And over my father's protestations, intense protestations, because he didn't like the lifestyle associated with surfing, and he wanted to see me keep playing hockey, my mom, you know, took the initiative and demanded that I stop playing hockey and bought me a surfboard.
That's funny. Yeah, well, and they think that's, like, safer. I like that, yeah. I know. I was raised in Alaska, and so we used to have that, you know, the population isn't just huge up there, so we had an Anchorage team, a hockey team, and then they would send over Russian teams. At the time,
right.
We didn't even get Canadian teams. The Russian teams actually came over,
yeah,
to play us. Yeah, it was funny.
Not that far away, and the Russians have always been just amazing.
Oh, they're amazing hockey players.
Yeah.
So yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Which is funny. I mean, you know, we just don't think of them as hockey players, but they're hockey players.
Oh, yeah. They played at a very, very high level.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, with the National Hockey League on strike, it's kind of fun to talk about hockey. really, really finally starting to miss it. You know, you start getting deep into winter, and the urge to play, and the urge to watch. You know, it's in the blood, especially if you're born in the East, you know, particularly in Canada.
Yeah, well, you know, even my son played hockey for Los Angeles for their teams and stuff, and he was born in Alaska, but he was all about not surfing really here when we lived in Malibu. He was playing hockey, which was such a weird thing, but then he became a surfer too. So yeah, we have surfboards. You know, I still have surfboards everywhere. So from those days,
what a great place to be, Malibu. That's a beautiful spot.
It is.
Just a wonderful place, I would think, to, especially if you can spread out a little bit and hear the ocean. Hard to get better than hearing the ocean at night when you go to sleep.
Right. I know. It is. It's great. So now you're in San Francisco, and you're writing for the newspapers, and you have written this amazing book. So I want to hear about and it's called If You Ever Need Me, I Won't Be Far Away, which is really a beautiful title.
Yeah, it's the title comes from the words that my mom gave me shortly before she passed away in 1999 when she was dying of cancer. And she said, you know, she looked at me and she felt a calmness about me, even though it was incredibly painful, difficult, torturous time to watch her pass, you know, die of cancer. So a woman that my mom was just such a great friend and mentor and guide and mom. And she, you know, a couple of days later she passed, but she said to me, "Bruce, just remember, I'll always be with you. I'll always be with you. And if you ever need me, I won't be far away."
Hmm. Right. And has she done this for you since she was a great psychic? I mean, you were saying that she even read for, like, Marlon Brando. I mean,
she read for the people that couldn't afford readings from the inner cities, and the poor, and she read for the very wealthy, rich and famous, and,
sure,
you know, including Marlon Brando. And yeah, I mean, it became something. I mean, it never seemed very unusual to me. It may have seemed, you know, extraordinary or exotic to my friends, you know, growing up from time to time. But to me, it was just commonplace to have a mom that would tell your tell you about your life and give you inspiration or information or advice, and could definitely see, you know, paths as they unfolded.
Right, right. Like my kids have always said, like, your mom has eyes in the back of her head. You know, we can't get away with anything. Yeah, so you had one.
A lot of moms have that, and then some moms have it even a little bit more, right?
Right, right. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, moms are powerful, that's for sure.
Yeah, no
doubt. When they tune in, man.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. So she speaks to you now. Do you do automatic writing? I mean, tell me
how the
book includes her.
Pardon me?
Tell me how the book includes her.
In many ways. I don't do automatic writing, but, you know, there's a scent that people have. And if you go back into the Hebrew, you know, deep Hebrew tradition, they all if you even go back into the Old Testament, they talk about, it talks about scent. Scent being an extremely important sense to, you know, smelling, you know, to extremely important sense for divining and hear, you know, when it associates, it accompanies the word of God, it accompanies inspiration, it accompanies many of the things that have unfolded in, you know, in history, at least, you know, in the Hebrew tradition. And in many other traditions, I know as well. But that's really how my mom reveals herself. There's a scent that she had that shortly after she passed, I was able to to sense in many places, in rose gardens, on street corners, on, in the woods, even in the middle of a busy, traffic intersection in London or in Paris or, some in New York, and it would be the same scent whether it was in a garden or whether it was in a paradise or whether it was in the middle of a traffic congested intersection. So, and that scent continues to come from time to time, and it's unmistakable. And even my sons know it. And they were young when she passed, and they still, if they need to know something, or they're quandary over something, or wondering about something, or want some sort of advice. And my mom said to them when they were younger, before she even knew she was sick, I mean, she said that she would always be there for them. All they'd have to do is just think about her. And that scent comes to them in their own way, and it comes to me. So I would say she reveals herself in scent. She appears certainly in dreams, and oftentimes I feel her. I just sense my mom. I feel her. I can hear her voice. And in writing my book, I mean, very often throughout the book, I often felt that that my mom was taking a hold of the pen, from time to time. Every once in a while, she'd want to write a paragraph and let me know she was there.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, so she sounds like she was really powerful. Like she's powerful in death like she was in life.
Yeah, and it wasn't a power in the sense of being all, using power for any particular end or as a means. It was just that she was had an incredibly huge spirit, incredibly compassionate and giving and loving and healing. So just a natural flow of life and energy that came out of her in life and in the other world.
Right. It looks like we have a caller on the line.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody has a question for us.
Okay.
Tara.
Hi.
Tara. Hi. Hi, Tara.
Hi, Tara.
Hi.
Happy birthday.
Is this the Tara I know?
Yes, it is.
Oh, hi, sweetheart.
Tara McCabe. How are you? And happy birthday a couple days late. I hope you had a beautiful
celebration. Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, still being celebrated.
Bruce, I wanted to say that I read your sample of your book yesterday when I saw Tara was going to have you on the show. I'm going to download it, and I'd recommend everyone to go to smashwords.com. That's where I downloaded a sample, and I got really riveted last night by your memoir. It's really beautiful.
What was your name again? I'm sorry.
Tara.
Tara as well?
Tara,
yeah. Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I guess there's you're able to access the first several pages online.
I was just wondering if you could discuss a little bit about self-publishing, the challenges, and any advice you can give to fledgling emerging writers, especially when you have come from a place like you did, combining the East and Western philosophies and discussing life and whatnot.
You mean discuss how you can go about doing it?
Just your journey, yeah.
My journey? Okay.
Yeah, a little bit of that. Thank you.
I wrote this book knowing that it was a book in my entire life I knew that, and I've done a fair amount of writing wrote essays for the BBC and did some, I wrote and recorded them for the BBC, and I always wanted to write and incorporate writing into my day job, which is the investment world. And I always knew that there was a serious book in me and maybe a couple of other less serious books, but life events unfolded in such a way that it created the opportunity to I had the peace and time and moment for reflection, and knew that this is inevitable. This is a book that I had to write, and I knew it was part of me, part of my journey, my personal journey, and possibly, probably, likely the journey of other people to read this book and write about their own journeys and for just, you know, I think in being the most honest, in writing a memoir, you want to be the most honest person you can be. You want to, you know, if you're going to touch people, and if the, ultimately the first goal is to truly, it's cathartic, to be as accurate as you can be, to depict yourself in time as possible, to be true to your, you know, the person you, you remember yourself to be and true to the person you, you believe yourself to be in the present. And in doing so, you enable other people to take a look at their lives and to look at their journeys and perhaps even write their own memoirs and want to publish their own memoirs, which, you know, is your question. So I knew that I had to write it. I knew that I would write it. And I knew that somewhere along the way, something would happen, or I felt it would, because I just felt the necessity of this book, that it would be able to get out there, and it wasn't going to be put in a drawer, and I wasn't going to allow that to happen. And after I finished the book, I let a person read it, an editor here in San Francisco, and a former journalist for the San Francisco Chronicle, a columnist for many years. And I had told her about the book during the course of writing because I thought I wanted to get her feedback and that, you know, and perhaps she might edit it. And I brought it to her, and her comment to me was extremely inspirational. After she read parts of it, and she said to me that when I was first telling her about the book, she knew I was a good writer, but she thought it was going to be something that mainly interested. It was mainly for my family, that it would be about family and that it was going to be of interest to primarily friends and family. And then she sent me this, she read it, and she sent me this message or email that she said she was just absolutely, totally blown away by it. And she started comparing it to other things she'd written, and I mean, that other people have written and other books that had been written. And that just... I felt, you know, it was a deep personal story that had to be told, but if the fact that it touched her, this editor, a person that I really respected, in such a deep, profound way, and she sort of blew me away with her comments, it just further gave me incentive to want to do something with it. And so my boys had come home from back east for the holidays, and one of my sons had a friend, and they got together, and he was telling the friend about it. And this is a serendipitous sort of situation. And she says, you know, I should show that to my dad. And my son said, yeah, I mean, why? And she said, well, my dad is a publisher, and he's published a lot of major people in his life. So she provided me with the information to send to her dad. Her dad read the book. Basically had been retired, but liked the story enough to want to work with me on publishing the book. And so from that encounter, we created a publishing company called Alma Rose Publishing, named after my mom. And we published this book together. Donald Ellis is his name, and he had published, Allen Ginsberg and Lawrence Ferlinghetti and William Saroyan and a lot of poets from, you know, many different people. So it was
amazing.
I worked with him and with his knowledge and my interest, and we connected to a few other people, including the person that set up this interview. I'll mention her name, Isabella Michon. What a fantastic person and publicist.
She's a sweetheart.
Yeah, she's a wonderful person. She's behind this book. And just the right people sort of came together, but it was really a personal mission that led to meeting a number of people that believed in the book, and we all brought it out together. And now there's a publishing company with which we'll, you know, probably publish a couple more books for sure.
That's excellent. And I really also like the way you're dealing with the 2008 financial crisis. There's not been many personal memoirs that have dealt with the loss that many of us encountered with the crash. And I just want to thank you for being so open about the complications of love
yeah.
and that kind of thing in your life and what yeah. all that means and just your personal journey. It was really beautiful, and I look forward to getting the whole thing, and so I will do that and look forward to more of your books.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, the financial crisis works its way into it. It was something that touched me as a person in the investment world, and I tried to make it, try to describe how that, you know, how that occurred and why it occurred in the most basic way I could, but also how it touched me and, you know, in my day job.
Yeah. Beautifully written. So it's wonderful. Tara, thank you for having the emerging authors
yeah.
on your show. It's really, I'm glad I found this book. So thank you.
Take okay. care. Thank you, sweetie. Okay. Love you. Blessings. I'll talk to you soon.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah. Yeah, that's wonderful. It's wonderful that she came on. She's similar to you. I mean, you know, you work a Western job, you know, investment banking.
Mm-hmm,
so you
exactly.
work during the day. And
Trading.
Then you have this great spiritual life and open to, you know, the wonders and the unlimitless of, you know, belief and possibilities. And she's an attorney. So she's the same. Yeah.
Nice.
So
well, I'm
great.
Glad she came on as well.
Yeah. Yeah, she's lovely.
You know, your left brain and right brain, we, you know, try to combine both, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. So, yeah, so you have been really open, I know, about love and all the rest of it. But we're going to take a commercial break here in a moment. So I want everybody to be able to find your book. So where do you recommend that everybody picks it up?
Well, you can buy the book directly from the website, which is almarosepublishing.com, A-L-M-A-R-O-S-E, you know, publishing.com. It's also available Barnes & Noble's website. It's available on Amazon, certainly. It's in some bookstores, but primarily in the Bay Area, mainly in San Francisco. And if they don't, a bookstore doesn't have it, you can certainly order it. If you want to walk into a bookstore, they can certainly order it. It's available through a couple of distributors, Ingram and Partners West up in Seattle. So many places to find it if you want to find it.
Okay, so Amazon.com and AlmaRosePublishing.com.
And
okay,
Barnes and
A-L-M-A-R-O-S-E mm-hmm. at publishing.com. Okay, and you spell out publishing the whole word.
Yeah, AlmaRosePublishing.com.
Right? Okay.
And so, you can walk into a bookstore and they can always order it if you don't want to go online, you know.
Right. Right. And so you're listening to Transformations with Tara, and my guest is Bruce F. Rosen, and we will be right back.
Welcome to Transformation with Tara Sutphin. If you'd like to find out more about Tara's work, upcoming seminars, and meditations, visit her website at tarasutphin.com.
Talk Radio is now available in more ways than ever. Go to iTunes and download the brand new app for your iPhone and iPad today. It's just one click and you'll be listening live to your favorite hosts and shows. You'll never have to guess what's on because the schedule is always up to date and right at your fingertips. You can start listening live right now by heading over to the iTunes Store and downloading the new CTR app. Consciousness in action. Now, no matter where your journey takes you, we all have amazing talents and knowledge that should be shared with the world. Become a host on Contact Talk Radio and help spread your insight and wisdom. Help others grow as you grow your business and reach a level of connection far greater than you could reach on your own. Take the first step and learn more by visiting ContactTalkRadio.com or contact Cameron at 425-221-3646. Continue to spread the word about the importance of conscious living. Want to become a member of an amazing and fun group of individuals? Then you need to join the Contact Talk Radio Network. When you join Contact Talk Radio, you join our social network, where you can chat with the show hosts and other members, post pictures, even videos. When you join Contact Talk Radio, you receive exclusive information about our shows, events, and all the latest happenings. When you join Contact Talk Radio, you become a member of our team, blazing a trail to greater understanding of the world we live in. Signing up takes less than a minute, and boom, you're in. Don't wait. Come join us. Visit ContactTalkRadio.com now and click Sign Up.
Welcome to Transformation with Tara Sutphen. Become involved now by calling 877-230-3062.
Welcome back to Transformations with Tara. This is Tara Sutphen. And my guest today is Bruce F. Rosen. And he has written the book, If You Ever Need Me, I Won't Be Far Away. And, you know, it was wonderful that Tara came on. And she was talking about how wonderful this book is. Because it is like you get really so immersed in, you know, Bruce's story. So, Bruce, I want you to talk about how your 25-year marriage, how that affected you and how you've written about it in the book.
It affected me profoundly, and I think the coming apart of it is something that I looked at very, very closely. I analyzed through the book. I asked the questions that I think people should ask if their marriage is not continuing, or they think that it may not, or that they are trying to hold it together, and take, you know, it's a conscious book that looks at where our lives are, where we seem to be going, you know, and why, and it asks the questions of why things happen the way they do, and why we can't seem to put the pieces back together, why we can't seem to cross the bridge to get back together, as much as you continue to love each other and have a very loving family, which we do. And when my boys come back from, sons come back from New York, we all get together as a family and do things as a family, and even sometimes travel as a family and go to dinner as a family and share the love that we have for each other as a family. But the marriage, we seem to be, the earth rotates on its axis. I say something like this in the book: the earth rotates on its axis, and we're standing in the same place, but all of a sudden, we're not magnetized anymore, or something's happened to demagnetize, you know, the magnetic, you know, attraction. Not that there's not an attraction, but the glue that magnetic glue that holds you together. The world turns, and all of a sudden, you find that for whatever reason, you simply cannot connect in the same way, and your paths are diverging. So, as the marriage unfolded, I write about it throughout the book, and the joy of what we shared, and the pain that we, you know, carry these memories through our lives and are not creating all the new memories that we thought we would create, although we're creating memories in different ways than we expected. And I think one of the lessons, and we can go into the marriage deeper if you want, or talk about how it happened or all of that, but I think one of the lessons is that you learn, especially if you're conscious and you look at the reasons, you learn that you know, if you impose too much guilt on yourself, I mean, there's a certain amount of self-examination you have to do in anything, especially when your marriage no longer is together. But I think that it's very unhealthy to dwell on regret, and to regret is to prevent yourself from moving forward. And it does inform you about making the right choices in your life. You've got to look at, if you do feel regret, feel it, but then move on, because there's a reason that certain things happen in your life, and you can either overcome them and realize that you've learned a lesson and now you're a stronger couple, and as it were, as far as marriage is concerned, or you realize that perhaps personal freedom and other elements, you know, in your life, the other person's sense of personal freedom as well. And maybe there are things to do that you can't do together. But for whatever reason, you have to allow life to unfold without regret, although you should go through that period of self-examination and be as conscious as you can to look at what's happening and whether your motivations are correct and whether you're going to, you know, wish you hadn't made decisions that you've made. And as far as marriage is concerned, I mean, if you feel that it's not working, try really hard. Go through some therapy and you know, communicate and do what you can. But if you can't, recognize that you know that we all have our life paths, and sometimes you know, a marriage can last forever. It can last 20 years. It can last a year. And in each instance, it may be an eternity in its own right.
Right.
So I examine my life quite a bit, and I describe in the book that feeling of when we separated and lived in a really nice house in San Francisco and separated, and I moved my boxes to an apartment, and actually it was a nice apartment, and it had a view of the city of the Golden Gate Bridge, and you know, here I am, cold wintry night with all these boxes in a you know, empty apartment room, looking out over the city just alone, you know, realizing I've got to put these boxes away, and sitting on top of a couple of boxes and feeling the air sort of move in to the apartment from outside and essentially move out, you know, essentially as well. And almost like the apartment itself was breathing in and out. It was a very deep existential feeling of liberation and loneliness at the same time.
Interesting. That was both.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, it was both. It was a sense of, you know, you have freedom unfolding in front of you, and what do you do with it?
Yeah.
I chose to write this book. That was the main thing I did.
Right, right. Now, yeah, I've been going through the same thing, but, you know, I've been separated for many years, but we are doing our divorce, and I'm doing a seminar in January at the Annenberg House, which is Marion Davies' house down in Santa Monica, and you know, who was involved with Randolph Hearst.
But
we,
yeah.
So anyway, I mean, I'm calling it right now. It's working title because I haven't advertised it yet. But it's Love, Life, Chaos, Madness, Be Gone.
Love, Life, Chaos, Madness, Be Gone. Yeah, very
yeah,
good.
Love, Life, Chaos, Madness, Be Gone.
Yeah, exactly.
So many people are in love, life, chaos, you know, and and I love that you were seeking liberation, but at the same time, it's very lonely because you're having to start over again somewhere, and that's just a really interesting spot to be in. After you build years of your life somewhere, and then all of a sudden there, it's like,
right.
what happened here?
Well, you have a new relationship, you know. I mean, yeah. and some people think that they, you know, if they're separate or they part, they, in order to give themselves a sense of power over it, they've got to be angry and they've got to have enmity and they have to constantly look for justifications and reasons to keep them empowered and strong and angry enough to justify what they're doing. And that's just you get caught up in a,
well, it's
in
small
a world
thinking.
Of,
it's
of
small.
Very small thinking and reaction and you don't allow love in, and the family suffers, and it's just a
lot. Yeah.
There's a reason in most cases why you fell in love with that person in the first place, and it's pretty nice to always be able to recognize and appreciate and honor that.
Yes. Yes. Well, and you know, I have gone through all of that sort of processing over the years, but yeah, no, you just have to live your life and you be in your personal power. And you know, you were born alone and you will die alone, and that's what I feel is your karma. You walk it, you know, walk
right.
The path. no matter what. No matter what anybody says, what anybody does, any jealousies, just go forward. It doesn't matter.
Not always easy, but you have to.
Yeah, yeah. It makes you stronger.
And if you need help along the way, it's, I mean, you know, people need, you know, need other people. I mean, to, or, you know, that it's desirable to have other people to share your feelings with.
Yeah. Yeah, well, to have fun, you know, life is supposed to be a joyful experience, not all that, you know, chaos of anything.
Yes, I think that's our birthright.
Yeah,
is joy.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. So tell me what you give to people as far as how they can connect to their joy again through the book.
How they can connect to their joy, I would say. Number one, I touched upon let go of regret.
Right.
I think that's very, very important. I mean, live it, analyze your life, and let go of regret.
That's beautiful, actually. I love that.
Giving of yourself freely. Allow yourself to give and allow yourself to receive. Some people have a hard time receiving. Some people have a hard time giving, whether it's small gifts, large gifts. Gifts of affection, gifts of love, gifts of friendship, gifts of just kind words. Some people have a hard time accepting gifts from others and have a hard time giving. And we're not talking about money. I mean, we're talking about just simply the basics of allowing yourself to give, allowing yourself to receive. I mean, that's certainly a way to arrive at joy. Another way to arrive at joy is to let yourself just do what you like to do. I mean, if you like music, listen to it. We get so caught up in things that we don't just sit down and do what we like to do. You know, if you want to go to a movie and somebody doesn't want to and you have a craving to go to a movie, you just go to a movie. You know, I mean, if you love sports, let yourself enjoy all the small little things in life. I mean, it's so basic. To just allow yourself to live, and you know, it's a world where we have so many responsibilities. We have our children, we have our parents, we have our spouses, we have friends, we have our jobs, we have, you know, it's numerous obligations, and they get in the way of sometimes of just simply living and just doing the thing that you would do when you were a kid. I mean, you play at a playground, or you do something, and, you know, I mean, I realize sometimes just how incredible it is to just come home and listen to music that I want to hear and haven't allowed myself to hear. So just allowing yourself to do the things you want to do is really, really important. So I'd say, you know, giving, allowing yourself to give, allowing yourself to receive, doing the things that are just simple, letting go of regret, certainly ways to, you know, to find joy. Allowing yourself to embrace other people. I mean, we're not, you know, we're not islands. And allowing ourselves to, even though people may, you're afraid that they're, you know, you make yourself vulnerable. Sometimes being vulnerable, I mean, leads to potential for really great joy.
Right,
so
right.
There are a number of,
now, yeah, talk about vulnerability, because it is an interesting, you know, being too vulnerable and too open, maybe, gaining pain in your life. Yeah.
Right. You have to protect yourself, but at the same time, we can prevent some nice things from happening if we get our own way.
Right. Right. Yeah, I do. I believe that being open, just being open. And I believe that it starts, that vulnerable space doesn't start really like being open just for love. It's really opening for being open to the grocery store clerk, you know, and saying,
right,
you know, a good morning or a good afternoon.
Right.
I mean, just being vulnerable to everyone to be on a kind level.
Right. And, you know, you can always feel when people have real big, barriers and blocks when you're communicating with somebody, and you can feel when they don't. And it's just a nice flow of energy when there are no big blocks in the way. You know, it doesn't mean you're going to connect on any other level, but just to be open.
Yeah.
Allows the potential for so much light to come in, you know?
Right, right. And that, I think, is where I think maybe our society gets to where is they're vulnerable. You know, they go out drinking or something, and they open up to people, and it becomes like there's no real fulfillment in it. So I think that's maybe where we get kind of confused about really socializing and actually giving of our time and energy and vulnerability. You know, there's a
Absolutely.
Richness that you take. It's not about anybody else. It's about you.
Exactly right.
And I think that's what, you know, people get confused by. And especially even during this holiday season, you know, Hanukkah and Christmas and the New Year is, you know, it's all about not necessarily giving on a financial level. It's giving your time and energy.
Right.
And,
right.
In some form.
You know, everything's, being in the investment world by day, it's easy to see things as a commodity, and many things, many things defined in terms of commodity. And just, it's just the mere giving of yourself is not a financial commodity, but it's still, you know, it's still something that, it is a commodity. I mean, you're spending energy, your personal energy, not that you're tied to it or attached to it or obsessed with it in any way. It's just everything we do is has value.
Yeah. And it does.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah. When we put
and
a value to
put
it,
monetary
then it value,
value on it.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
although,
no putting.
You know,
go on.
Money is energy, and giving yourself, your friendship is energy as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and how about like a forgiving and healing people who don't live up to our expectations? You were talking like in the book about your dad and how he didn't really live up to your expectations. But, you know, a lot of people in our just everyday life don't live up to our expectations. How do you believe that we forgive and release all that?
I think that's another key to allowing joy to enter your life, and that is to not hold on, to move on from personal animosities and anger, and to let go of these jealousies or to let go of anger, because it leads to just an unhealthy life physically and emotionally. Yes, my father was quite a difficult person, and could be abusive physically, as parents were. Many were in those days. They think the way you'd raise your kid was to, if you needed a beating, you better give him one. And he definitely, had his violent moments, made it difficult quite often growing up, and wasn't always emotionally the most nurturing person in the world, to say the least. But I came, and I always grew up, when I grew up, I remember thinking very often, God, I just wish I had a normal father. I wish I had a father like some of my friends do, that take them to games and do these things and actually show affection and show compassion and actually act as a teacher and a mentor. My father was really kind of caught up in trying to live and make it, support a family, and certainly didn't go much out of his way to show a lot of affection, and certainly, as I say, had his violent moments. But later on...
Yeah, that self-centered passion. Yeah.
Yeah. But later on... I learned, even in my later teens, and he left when I was 16, parents split, and I learned to let go of that. And there were probably about 3 or 4 years where I didn't speak to him at all. From probably 16 to 19 or almost 20, 19 and a half maybe, where I didn't even speak to him. And but over time, I let go. You know, you forgive. You don't forget, but you certainly let go. And, you know, there was a moment in the, it occurs in the book, when I went to see him several years ago in Canada, in Montreal, where he was raised, and his parents had now passed, and I felt close with his parents, and his couple of his siblings had passed, and I went to see him, and I saw the house where he was raised, and a place that we would go to when we moved back to Canada in my early teens. You know, my grandparents, and I saw, and he was raised from a very young age there, and we had a picture taken, and it's in the book. It's right in front of that house on 100 Villeneuve Avenue in Montreal, Canada. And I saw him, you know, as we stood there together, I saw him as a, you know, as a man that was once 20, that was once 23, that was once 18, you know, that played music, that was. That was loved playing jazz, that had his own dreams and goals and objectives, and was not weighed down by the baggage of responsibilities and raising a family and trying to live up to your own goals and objectives and also take care of a family. I saw him as this person without all the baggage and loved him as a human being, and he is my father. And And you love a person for, you know, the fact that you come from them, and you recognize that we're all human beings and all very fallible, and we're all doing the best we can. I mean, you also learn from people that, you know, you want to shape your behavior in a way that is a lot different from what you see. And so you have to learn. But letting go and forgiving and allowing that person to emerge as who they are, free of all the projections you put on them, free of your own pain, I think is really important.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and just a release. It's probably just release.
Seeing people as they are.
Yeah.
You know, seeing them as they are, not how you wish they would be.
Yeah. Yeah, and allowing them to be perfect in the eyes of God is what I always
exactly.
say. Yeah, they're living whatever karma that they were chosen to live.
Exactly, and you know, I mean, it's almost a, you know, you talk about Eastern and Western philosophy, and there is a fair amount of Eastern Western philosophy in this book. I mean, as a kid, I was a philosophy major in college, and I studied Western philosophy. I studied Eastern philosophy, you know, there is that interplay between Eastern and Western philosophy, and you know, are we to what extent are we free to make our choices? That's the old Western philosophical notion of free will versus determinism. I mean, to what extent are we our choices made for us? You know, fate, and to what extent is there chance? To what extent is there, you know, randomness in the universe? To what extent are we making choices, and are we freely making them? And what are the limitations upon them? And on the other hand, the sort of the Eastern side of it is just recognizing that life is unfolding, and try to see things, you know, as they are, see people as they are, and recognize that there is this, as you say, I mean, this karma and cause and effect, which is very Eastern and very Western.
Yeah, and I love that, you know, that to come into our sight, really to integrate it into our life, as far as knowing that we can stop being so uptight. And I think that's where your book is really good on all that, you know, an inside look into how you dealt with some of these major problems that, you know, everybody's facing these days.
Yeah.
You know, love issues. I mean, these money issues, you know, everybody's like afraid of the end of the world next week, which is silly and that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to walk into my office and, you know, and I'll leave and I'll go home on that day. I no doubt.
No doubt. No doubt. I have always told my teenagers I have a psychic teen class. If you live 5 minutes or 150 years, it's how you live.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, there's definitely that. You can't go by any sort of calendar thing. Thingy-me-bob.
Thingy-me-bob. It's enough that it interrupts your life as it is, you know.
The precursor. You know that somebody I know put on the on Craigslist as a joke, put if you're selling your house or any of your stuff for the end of the world, definitely hit me up. I'll be buying. And they've actually had tons of stuff come in. Yeah.
That's a great, you know, investment mentality, you know. I mean, when everybody's selling, you want to be a buyer.
Right. And so I'm sure it's not because they believe in the end of the world, a lot of these people. They just are selling something. It's like, oh yeah, no, I'm gonna go for it.
Yeah, definitely. It's a bit of a joke in that, and it's also, you know, quite interesting. Yeah, it has a lot of aspects to that. You know,
right.
It's funny. It's it's also a, you know, it touches upon, you know, all the fears that are out there. But yeah, I mean, I like it.
No fear, everybody. Your new holiday mantra: no fear.
Exactly.
Okay, I want everybody to be able to find your book. So you can get it on Amazon.com. It is called If You Ever Need Me, I Won't Be Far Away. And it's by Bruce F. Rosen. And you have now your publishing site is Alma Rose Publishing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
AlmaRosePublishing.com. And you can buy the book there. You go to the website, and there's a lot of interesting stuff on the website. There have been a few TV interviews, one that occurred on the Today Show, and a number of other, you know, radio programs and articles, and, you know, a whole bunch of interesting things on the site.
Yeah. Okay. Good. So, and some of your other writings, I saw that you wrote for a Chinese newspaper and went by the name of Bruce Wong.
Yeah, do we have some time? I mean, I don't know how much time we have, but that's an interesting
part. We only have about 2 minutes. So.
That's a very interesting part of the book. I, you know, when I first moved to San Francisco, I got a job writing articles for a Chinese magazine, and it really was interesting. I mean, I wrote a number of things and got deep into, you know, San Francisco Chinatown politics, and wound up breaking some pretty interesting stories that eventually ended up on a couple of them quite controversial, that people just revealed this information to me. I was this young fledgling journalist I was a grad student as well as a journalist in Chinatown. And there's a section in the book called Chinatown where I describe that. And then there's the publisher of the newspaper. You know, they weren't bringing in a lot of ad revenue, and there was a guy that was running the ads, a tough guy from Canada that actually recognized my uncles, who, that's another story and it's another book, but they were extremely well known in Toronto, and he recognized that they were my uncles, and because he was raised in Toronto, and he had a tough talking guy with no front teeth and a pipe dangling from his mouth, and looked like his nose had been broken a few times. And he said his claim to fame was he flew a Spitfire in the for the British Army. Missions into Germany in a Spitfire. He was a tough guy, tough talking guy. And he told the publisher that he wanted me to run to help him with the advertising in addition to the writing. And the publisher went along with it and said, you know, like, basically you can. If you're going to stay here as a journalist, you're going to have to help this guy run ads. So
I love it. You know, we're running out of time.
I became. He told me I had to use a Chinese last name to sell the ads, so he gave me Bruce Wong.
Yeah. Blessings, everyone. Happy holidays. Thank you, Bruce, for being on the show.
Thank you, Tara.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your time with Tara Sutphin. Find out more about Tara's work, upcoming seminars, and meditations. to help you fulfill your dreams by visiting her website at terasutphin.com.